Steve Dale back with you on WGN. This book is not easy to describe. Hiding for My Life, Being Gay in the Navy. You'd think that says it all, but it really doesn't. Karen Sult is the author of the book. Karen, I'm not sure where to begin with this. Here you are in the Navy, and the culture is not what it is in the United States in general, but we're also going back in time. We're going back about how many years to the point where you joined the Navy, you have an idea that you're gay, but don't think that it will be celebrated if you tell people.
Yeah, I mean, I joined the Navy in 1984, so when I joined, things were different than they are today, a lot less visibility, but the culture in the Navy definitely was much different than it is today. Gay service members back then were hunted down and discharged from active duty pretty immediately, so much different than it is today, especially in the military.
And actively hunted down, you use that term in the book as well. What would be the point of that, or is that a question that is so ridiculous because it's, and has that changed? And it brings me to Don't Ask, Don't Tell, so I'm asking several things all at once. You'd think that would be a good thing. Don't ask, don't tell. It's none of your business what my sexual preference is. But it turns out Don't Ask, Don't Tell, as you explain in the book, wasn't a great thing at all.
Well, it was a step in the right direction. Before Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the criminal investigative branches of the services, so for me specifically, I was in the Navy, so the NCIS, Navy Criminal Investigative Service, one of their purposes was to hunt us down, try to catch us, and then if they caught one person, they would interrogate that person, try to get that person to flip on other people, and before you knew it, a bunch of people could be kicked out, separated all at once. Don't Ask, Don't Tell came along 10 years after I joined in 1994. And so the difference was is that there was two specific differences. One was that when you enlisted, they asked you a question, have you ever had homosexual conduct or homosexual tendencies? And that was removed from enlistment documents and also security clearance documents. And then the other thing was that the services could no longer hunt us down. So NCIS could no longer hunt us. But during Don't Ask, Don't Tell alone, at a minimum, 14,000 people were still rooted out and separated. So it was a step in the right direction. But it definitely still was problematic because the message was that we had to stay silent. We had to hide our identity, hide who we were, still look over our shoulder to keep serving our country. So it was still pretty challenging, but for me specifically, it was nice to not be hunted by NCIS anymore.
Well, I failed as an interviewer because really what I should have begun this conversation is to say thank you for your service. And I apologize.
Oh, no failure at all. Thank you for saying that.
Well, I apologize for not saying that earlier. I learned a lot in your book, and one thing I never would have thought about is the lesson that you described that women should never wear skirts on ships. Can you explain why?
Well, I showed up to my first ship, really naive, 18 years old, walked down this long pier in my service dress blues, which is a skirt, heels. Just rough. And on ships, a couple of things happen. Number one is that, you know, there's these metal staircases everywhere, and in those metal staircases are small holes. So really super hard to navigate up and down ladders in a skirt. The other thing that was rumored and we totally believed was that men would stand underneath the ladders and look up women's skirts.
Well, that I can understand. So, I don't remember you writing about that part in the book, but I can understand that.
I did, yeah. Yeah. There was two things. But you know, on board ship, they have these little, in a watertight door, they have this area that's called, we call them knee knockers, because anytime that you would step over it, sometimes you would hit your knees. And doing that with a skirt was also just really problematic. But, you know, at any given time, you'd be going maybe down five levels or up five levels to get to a different compartment. And doing that in a skirt was just ridiculous. So Yeah, that was one of my first lessons when I got to my first ship.
I've never tried to do that in a skirt. I've never tried to do anything
you
in
should,
a skirt. So,
if you try it, I would like a video and send to me specifically. Yeah, please.
Yes, you would deserve that. So,
I would love that.
Yeah. Tell me about Savannah, and then tell me about Sue.
So Savannah was my first girlfriend. I met her, you know, I didn't know that I was gay until I joined the Navy. I grew up in a small, conservative hometown and just didn't know anybody that was gay. Didn't, you know, this was a long time ago, wasn't really visible. So she was my first girlfriend, probably in 1985. So about a year after I joined the ship, I met her, and she was on a different ship. And, you know, I fell in love like I never had before. I had a couple of boyfriends before I dated her, and then I fell in love with her. I actually, she was on a different ship. I figured out a way to get on her ship, so I swapped with another sailor. Was really head over heels for this girl. But, you know, my first love, she broke my heart. And then I met Sue probably, well, end of 1989. So I'd been in the Navy almost 6 years when I met Sue, and I met her in Hawaii. And Sue and I were together for almost 2 decades. Both of us were very committed to our jobs, but both of us were very committed to our relationship as well. You know, with any relationship in the military, the biggest challenge back then, well, one of the biggest challenges was staying together. And Sue and I struggled with that, not romantically staying together, but physically staying together. We got separated because the Navy considered us to be single, and we didn't, you know, we couldn't tell the Navy that we were in a committed relationship. And so we would get separated from each other in different assignments, and then we would fight our way back to each other. But yeah, Sue and I both climbed the ranks together. We spent about a 3.5 year section of our relationship apart from each other, trying to fight to get back together. And once we did, we sacrificed our careers from that point on to stay together. And then both of us retired from the Navy as senior chief petty officers. So both of us made E8. E9 is as high as you can go in the military.
I don't know whether I should ask you about H or not. What do you think? Should we have people say, you know what, hiding for my life, being gay in the Navy, Karen Soltz is the author, that they ought to pick up the book? Or do you want to give people a little insight? Either way, I'm okay with it. Your choice.
Well, I mean, I'm happy to give some insight. In 1995, I made what's called chief petty officer in the Navy. And for an enlisted sailor, chief is the goal. It's E7. You change uniforms. Everybody calls you chief. It's a huge deal in the Navy to make chief. And I made chief at 11 years. H was my master chief. He was my mentor. I revered him. I wanted to be just like him. He was the epitome of Joe Navy. Everything I wanted to be in the service, in the military, that guy was it. So I revered him professionally, but, to my dismay, he fell in love with me and thought that, and also thought that I was in love with him. And the challenge, you know, was that because I couldn't tell him that I was gay. He was the most senior enlisted person in my squadron without jeopardizing my career. And so I'd been working with this man for 3 years, and I make chief, and I'm beyond excited about being a chief. And the same day that I walk in as a chief is the same day that he tells me that he's in love with me and is going to leave his wife and, you know, will I be with him? And I won't give away exactly what happened. I will tell you that it was probably a turning point, a huge turning point in my life. There's been a few. But that experience and what happened after it, you know, is probably one of the, if not the biggest reason I had to go and write the book, because I had to reconcile it. And, you know, and that happened in 1995. And so, you know, 20 years later, I'm, you know, 25 years later, I'm writing the book. And I will tell you that it was the most devastating thing that ever happened to me. And the main reason that that happened, a main reason, you know, he has his reason that things happened the way they did. One of my reasons was that I had to hide who I was. If I could have told him 3 years earlier when I joined the squadron that I'm gay, his belief that I was in love with him would have not happened.
Of course. Karen, what are you doing now?
What am I doing now? I am a, I'm talking about the book. I've been out doing some running around and traveling and book events, things like that. But I also write about Hydology. I have a website called Hydology.com.
What's Hydology? Is that a place to play with kids and you're hiding? Like hide and go seek?
Nope.
I didn't
Hydology
think so.
Hydology is what I call the science of hiding. And so I consider myself a combat hydologist. I believe that, you know, when we think of coming out of the closet, we always think about the LGBTQ plus community. But everybody hides, whether it's for addiction or perfectionism or body image or people pleasing. We all hide who we are to some extent. And I like to write about and talk about those things. So, that's what I do now is I write about that. I talk about that. I really just live my life today. You know, I'm retired from the Navy. I like having a peaceful life with my dog and not stressing about things that used to stress me out.
Well, nothing wrong with having a peaceful life. Hiding for My Life. That's the name of the book, Being Gay in the Navy. It's a great read. Karen Solt, thank you very much for being with us on WGN.
Hey, Steve, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.